Marlins Hot Stove Show with Glenn Geffner is on.
Tyson fires, Morneau swings, loops one into center field, out goes Etch, a long way out, he dives and makes the catch to save the night.
940 wins.
How about that for thrills?
Miami Sports.
Talk about Christmas coming early. This is a great Florida trifecta here, one that made us smile as we were putting this together. And, you know, Mike and I and our scouts, we have to have a lot of credit go to our professional and amateur scouting staff, guys that helped put these reports together and the things that that they shared with us during this time. But this is very exciting. We had some boxes that we feel like we needed to check and fill during this off season. And sometimes things have a way of coming together the right way. And, you know, there's a constant denominator here that all these guys are Florida guys. And there's a pride factor in that. And each guy in their own way mentioned it. And I think that it speaks volumes about what they're wanting to accomplish. Certainly in Michael Morse's case, he's been to the top of the mountain, and these other two guys want to get there. And I think that when you look at the quality of the people that they are and what they bring to really an already young and exciting team, that we feel very confident and look forward to the 2015 season.
Well, that is Marlins General Manager Dan Jennings welcoming newcomers Dee Gordon, Michael Morse, and Matt Latos to Marlins Park at a media event on Friday. And now we welcome you to another edition of Marlins Hot Stove. Tonight, our final show before Christmas. For the Marlins, most of the gifts have been unwrapped already. Since we did this last week, the Marlins have continued their incredible offseason makeover by adding a couple of new starters on the infield. Last Tuesday, they locked up free agent first baseman Michael Morse with a two-year contract. Morse, a 10-year veteran, was a big part of the Giants' run to the World Series title this past season. He's the bat the Marlins have been looking for to slot behind Giancarlo Stanton in the batting order. And he'll be one of my guests coming up later in tonight's show. And Friday, shortly after Morse, Matt Latos, and Dee Gordon were introduced to the media at the ballpark, the club made another move. This one, as big a surprise as any of the moves we've seen made this winter. The Marlins and the Yankees got together on a five-player deal, Miami receiving the versatile Martin Prado and right-handed pitcher David Phelps. In return, the Yankees get Nathan Eovaldi, Garrett Jones, and pitching prospect Domingo Germán. Prado, a guy who has been on the Marlins' radar for years. We saw a lot of him. Too much of him, actually, during his time with the Braves. He was always a thorn in the Marlins' side at the plate wherever he played defensively. Now, when this deal first came down on Friday, the immediate question was, where would Prado fit in the Marlins' lineup? But that question was answered later the same day when the Marlins agreed to deal third baseman Casey McGee to the Giants in exchange for a couple of young arms, right-handed pitchers Kendry Flores and Luis Castillo. So for the Marlins, here is the winner's scorecard. To this point, six trades involving a total of 23 players, all of that since November 28th. In less than a month, 10 Major League and Minor League players coming via trade, 13 Major League and Minor League players going via trade. You add in the free agent signing of Michael Morse, the addition of the Rule 5 left-hander Andrew McCarrahan, and oh yeah, Giancarlo's record-breaking 13-year, $325 million contract, and it is safe to say it has been a terrific haul for the Marlins so far here this winter. It all gives us a lot to talk about as we gather for the holidays with family and friends in the week ahead, and certainly a lot to talk about as we gather again together through the magic of radio here tonight. Last week on the show, we introduced you to new Marlins second baseman Dee Gordon, had a great conversation with Flash Jr. Tonight I'm going to talk with two more of the newcomers. My guests are going to be both Michael Morse and Matt Latos, a couple of South Florida natives. Both Morse and Latos were in the stands, Morse as an 11-year-old and Latos at age 5, when the Marlins played their first ever game back in 1993. Now, they're expected to be key contributors to their hometown team in 2015. Latos, a three-time 14-game winner as a Padre and a Cincinnati Red, a 3.34 ERA, 153 career big league starts with a better than 3-1 strikeout-to-walk ratio, having made more than 30 starts four times in the last five seasons, and having gone over 200 innings in two of the last 3 years, Latos steps right in to fortify the Marlins' rotation. And Morse, coming off a 16-homer regular season, then some postseason heroics for the Giants. He's hit as many as 31 home runs in a single major league season, did that as a National back in 2011. He's got big-time power, a .281 lifetime hitter with an .808 career OPS. On-base plus slugging, Michael Morse will take over at first base for the Marlins in 2015, year one of a two-year free agent contract That is another big bat for Mike Redmond to pencil in the heart of the Marlins batting order. Tonight's show, our final show of 2014, we'll take next week off. That's the bad news. But here's the good news. When we return on Monday night, January 5th, we'll be with you every Monday night right up until the start of spring training. And beginning with our next show, we'll be going to 2 hours a week. We'll be with you from 7 to 9 every Monday night beginning January 5th. That means more Marlins talk. That means more Marlins guests. And I hope that means we hear more from you. With the shorter show to this point, I haven't had a lot of time to get to your phone calls, but that's going to change when we go to 2 hours after the first of the year. We'll be looking for you to play a bigger role in our show come January 5th. No doubt there is a lot to talk about with this Marlins team. The start of spring training now just about 2 months away. A lot to get to on tonight's show, and we begin with my conversation with new Marlins first baseman, Michael Morse. Well, Michael Morse, Broward County bred, Nova High School, coming back home. For you as a free agent, you had options. Was that part of the decision?
You know, free agency, it's a fun time. You know, you get to, you know, see what's out there, and you get to try to pick the best fit. And when it was time to, start, looking around, the Marlins were always in my mind. And you always want to go to a team that wants to win. You know, at this part in my career, that's all I want to do is win. And coming off of a World Series championship, it's very important to me found a team that it wants to win. And once they signed Giancarlo and they started making these moves, and I remember telling myself, man, if they could get D Gordon. You know, I saw D's name getting thrown around. I saw that they got D. I said, man, they're in it to win it. And it just made sense. You know, I get an opportunity to play first base every day, a position I love, a position I feel comfortable at. You know, it's going to help me stay on the field. And, it just – all of it together just was a perfect combination to make this happen.
Giving me a lot of different things to jump off on in that one answer there. But I want to come back to growing up in South Florida. I didn't realize this. We knew Matt Latos was the first game the Marlins played back in 93, but you were also. What do you remember about that day?
Yeah, I remember being up in those bleachers in Wright, up in those nosebleeds, man. At back when it was called Joe Robbie, it's high up there, far away. And we were talking, me and my brother, about when Charlie Huff, struck out the first batter, Offerman, and the first pitch of the game was pretty outside, and they called it a strike and all. But it was. I got so many memories. I remember when Levo threw his, I think it was his perfect game, Levon Hernandez, or his no-hitter. Was it no-hitter or perfect? I can't remember. Yeah, no-hitter. And, and not only that, it's just that there's a lot of guys, a lot of Marlin greats that I've become over the years really close to and still close with. I looked up at them. I idled them, and now I get a chance to not only play for the team they were on, but do something what they did, and that's bring a championship back home.
That's the hope, to do something similar to what the Giants did this past season. Take me back to 2014 for you. What was it like being a part of that ride? You've been in the big leagues a long time. You've been to the playoffs once before in Washington, but what you guys did in San Francisco this past season really was remarkable. What was that ride like for you?
You know what? It was unbelievable because, we knew that we weren't the best team in the league. We knew that we weren't our best team in the division. On paper, the Dodgers, hands down, had the best team. So with that in mind, the one thing that the Giants do well is they know how to win, and they know how to win the ball games. And the team does what it takes. And everybody plays within their ability, and they play together. And, they taught me a lot. And one thing I'm going to miss about the Giants is that winning – edge and that win today feel. But at the same time, I get an opportunity now to take that of what I learned to a team which is up and coming and with an organization that is on the rise with so much talent, and bring that to this team. And what it does is it takes away a lot of the stress, because you know what? A season has ups and downs. And if you just go out every day and try to win today, don't think about tomorrow, it makes things a lot sweeter. And especially with this team and with this talent we have here, this team can go a long way. And all I think and what I was telling Dan Jennings, Mike Hill, is all we need to do is get into that postseason any way possible.
You mentioned the success and being a part of that in San Francisco. Hunter Pence is a guy who got a lot of attention, obviously. Marlins' last winner brought Jared Saltalamacchia in off a World Series win in Boston. Now you off a World Series win in San Francisco. How does that translate? Are you a vocal guy? Will you be a guy in the clubhouse who helps show the way to these young players?
You know, I will. I will if it needs to be. You know, something I've learned watching Buster Posey, which to me, this guy is one of the most humble superstars that I've ever met, and he leads by example, and you know that it's so amazing when you know you got guys, superstars like that you know fit in, and the thing is that if you look at this team right here with your Mike Stantons and we have superstars on this team, and now we have a great supporting cast. You know, Yelich and what he's doing, and Ozuna, and these guys, they're so good. And the more that they play, the more they're going to believe in their talents, and the more they're going to believe that this team can win. And I think from coming off of last year, being so close to making it to the postseason, that this team is starting to realize, hey, we're pretty good.
Talking with Michael Morse. Last thing about your time in San Francisco. I've gotten the sense in reading about you over the years that you're a guy who respects and appreciates the history of the game. In San Francisco, around Willie Mays a lot, Willie McCovey a little bit. I know he had some health issues. Barry Bonds. What did you take from being around those guys on a daily basis?
Man, you know, that's something I'll never forget. You know, having Willie Mays talk hitting to me, and Barry Bonds coming in and talking hitting, and McCovey. And you know, that's something that it just resonates deep down inside, and I love it, and that's something that, you know, I'm going to try to get around here while I'm here, at least with my connections with Pudge and LeVon Hernandez and Cliff Floyd. You know, Preston's always here for the, you know, doing his stuff. You know, Mike Lowe's around. I think it's great, and I love having those guys here because those guys are winners, and they've done it, and they know what it takes, and it's always good to you know, to have those guys in and out, and you know, I know they're excited for me, and I'm so excited to be, you know, here and to be home, you know, and this is my home, and now I get to play baseball in my backyard, so you know, it's surreal still.
Some folks may remember you came through the minors, broke into the big leagues as a shortstop. We've seen you mostly as a corner outfielder. About 140 big league starts at first base. Now you're a full time first baseman. Your comfort level at that position?
You know, my comfort level is there. You know, I've always played better at first. My first base is my position. You know, it's a position I feel comfortable with. It's a position where I feel, you know, I'm at my best. And you know, it just so happens, and you know, teams I was on in the past, there might have been a first baseman. So, you know, I'd go play in the outfield. So, you know, at the end of the day, I'll do whatever it takes, and I'll play whatever position need be. You know, it's been a while since I was over at Nova High School playing shortstop, you know, but if I got to, I'll go over there and get Pat McQuaid to teach me how to play short again. But, you know, I'm just so excited. And you know what? To know every day you're going to be at one position is really fun.
Have you been warned about the amount of time you're going to be spending with Perry Hill at spring training this year?
You know what? I don't know if Perry Hill has been warned about me. I'm going to pick his brain as much as he'll let me. And, you know, you can always get better. As a baseball player, you can always get better, and you're always learning. And, you know, he's one of the best in the game. And I just want him to help me as much as possible. And I'm going to try to do as much as I can to get better.
You've had a lot of success against the Marlins in your career. You played in this ballpark in 2012 as a National, had success here as a Giant last year. You were a tough out, especially in San Francisco, for the Marlins last year. Tell me about hitting in Marlins Park on a daily basis.
You know, I'll tell you one thing. It'll be a Jeopardy question one day, but the last person to hit a home run at the old park was me. So it's pretty cool. But you know, this is a great park. One thing about this park is you see the ball well, and you know, San Francisco has a huge park, and you know, I learned by talking to Barry, you know, Buster Posey, guys on the team, is that you gotta not think about the size of the park and just hit and play your game. And at this part of my career, I've learned how to adapt to situations like that, and you know, when I hit it, and if I hit it good, it's going to go no matter what park. So, you know, I'm just going to keep playing my game, and this lineup's going to be very fun to be in.
What about the prospect of that lineup, hitting behind D. Gordon, Christian Yelich, and Giancarlo Stanton?
Man, I mean, those guys right there, I mean, they bring so much energy, that those first three guys. And I remember being in San Francisco at first, playing first base in San Fran, and Yelich being on first base and just looking at him and saying, man, this kid can be a superstar. You know, one day he's going to be very good. And now to be a part of the team with him, it's going to be fun.
Welcome home. Great to have Michael Morse back.
Yeah.
That is Michael Morse, the New Orleans first baseman. He's a big guy at about 6'5", 245. I would not correct him if he were sitting right next to me right now. A couple of things I know I'm going to hear from you guys about on Twitter that he said. I just want to set the record straight on. He reminded us that he thought he was the last player to hit a home run in the old football stadium back in 2011, Sun Life Stadium. Actually, he was the last visiting player to hit a home run against the Marlins in that stadium. In the second-to-last game the Marlins played there, September 27th of 2011 against the Nationals, Morse did hit a home run. He hit it off Javier Vasquez in the fifth inning. But in the ninth inning of that game, Brian Peterson actually was the last player to ever hit a home run at Sun Life Stadium. Petey hit a walk-off home run off Doug Slayton in that ballgame. So Morse, the last visiting player to hit a home run at Sun Life. And he also mentioned a Levon Hernandez no-hitter. And again, those of you who follow this stuff very closely, you're saying to yourself, wait a minute, Levo never threw a no-hitter. And I think what he might have been thinking about was the big strikeout game, the 15 strikeout game in the NLCS back in 97. But I just wanted to set the record straight on those couple of things. That said, can't say enough about Michael Morse, his enthusiasm. He talks about the work ethic, his excitement over being back here in South Florida where he grew up, getting set to have a baby. And this is a really exciting time in Morse's life. And just couldn't help but really being struck in talking with him about what he's going to bring to this ball club. The Marlins lose a lot in Casey McGee. And as the show goes on tonight, I'm going to hope to have some time to talk about this a little bit. Casey McGee, forget about the numbers, was probably the heart and soul of the Marlins clubhouse this past season. He was a big-time leader. Michael Morse, I think, has a chance to step in his first year in this team, a veteran of 10 years in the big leagues, a guy who just won a World Series with the Giants, a guy who's been around Buster Posey and other players like that. And I think this guy's got a chance to step in and fill a lot of that Casey McGee void in the clubhouse. On the field, he'll lead by example. In the clubhouse, he's learned from some of the best. And it really seems as though he's prepared to step in and not just contribute on the field, but help out in a big way off the field for these Marlins in 2015 and 2016, signing this two-year contract. So a big-time addition, big bat in the middle of the lineup, and what he's going to bring off the field, I think, is going to be one of the great stories to watch over the course of this upcoming 2015 season. So that's Michael Morse, one of the newcomers, going to have a conversation with another one, Matt Latos, big right-hander stepping into the Marlins rotation in 2015. We'll talk with Matt when we come back. This is Marlins Hot Stove on 940 Wins.
Baseball's burning questions all winter long. All winter long. Fire up the stove with the Marlins' Glenn Geffner on 940 Wins.
Right around third, Ozuna the throw to the plate, and Wright is out at the plate. Ozuna throws out the tying man for the second out of the eighth.
Miami Sports.
Talking baseball, as we always do with you at this time on Monday nights, the Marlins with a new-look ball club heading into 2015. You just heard from Michael Morse. In a minute, you're going to hear from Matt Latos. Your first chance to maybe get face-to-face and meet some of these new Marlins coming up. The Marlins winter warm-up at Marlins Park, Saturday, February 21st. Want to mark your calendar, bring the family out to Marlins Park for a day of fun. Purchase single-game tickets for the 2015 season. Select your seats for season ticket and mini plans. Get autographs from Marlins players and alumni, and enjoy games, activities, music, and entertainment for all ages. Don't miss Marlins winter warm-up at Marlins Park, Saturday, February 21st. For more information, go online to marlins.com. So you've heard from Michael Morse. Matt Latos, another big addition to this ball club. Latos acquired in a deal with Cincinnati Reds at the winter meetings. Latos, who broke in with the Padres back in 2009, he won 14 games three times in the span of four seasons as a Padre in 2010, then as a Red in 2012 and 2013. Four straight seasons with 30-plus starts between 2010 and 2013 for Matt Latos. He went over 194 innings in 2011, topped 200 innings pitched in 2012 and 2013. Last season, limited to only 16 starts, tore his meniscus in a freak accident just at the very beginning of spring training, twisted his knee awkwardly on the mound and missed a lot of time early on. Then he had a bone bruise in his elbow late in the season that shortened his year. He was shut down in September because of those injuries. But he is healthy. He is ready to go. Matt Latos, a big addition to this Marlins rotation for 2015. Here's our conversation.
Well, Matt, we had heard at the start of the offseason the Reds had four pitchers heading into their free agent years. There were likely to be a trade or two. Did this catch you by surprise?
It didn't. Obviously you don't really know when you're going to get traded, so it's kind of a surprise whenever you wake up and there's rumors floating around, or they're in the process of making a trade. But it's no big deal. I mean, it's there's no hard feelings. It's a business, and we all understand that. And the Reds are a great organization. They went about it the right way. They dealt with it the right way, and I'm grateful. They traded me to a place where I'm comfortable. I'm back home. It could have been worse. I could have been somewhere where I have no clue with anything what's going on. And it's nice that they sent me to a place where I'm at a high level of being comfortable, and put me around a lot of great talent, a lot of great people.
You mentioned that comfort level. You come out of Coconut Creek High School, Broward College. What does it mean being home for you?
It's exciting. It means I get back to warm weather. I can get a tan. No, I'm kidding. It is very exciting. I will say that. It means a lot. It's a way for me to. I get to stay home. I get to be here, and I get to pitch for a hometown crowd. I get to pitch for a team that I grew up coming to games and watching games and cheering them on. Guys like Matt Manti and Randy Messenger was a Marlin for a little while, and Rob Nen going back to the old days. You have so many. So many memories of an organization. Because you're a little kid and you grew up and you watch baseball, and it's definitely going to be a great time, and it's great to be able to put on a Marlins uniform. After watching them for so many years when I was younger, and to be able to represent the team that that's your hometown team, and perform the best that you can.
You talk about that hometown team thing. You come from the oldest franchise in professional baseball in Cincinnati to one that's only going into its 23rd season now. You were 5 years old for Game 1 back in 1993, and you were in the stands at the old football stadium. Take us back to that day. What do you remember?
I remember it was Charlie Huff that started. I remember my old bench coach in San Diego, Ricky Renteria, was on the team as well. And Jeff Coe and I hit a double to right center field. There was a lot that went on. Man.
Scott Pose had a big day that day, as I recall.
Yeah. I was 5 years old, and that's a long time. I do remember some highlights that were going through. I remember it was exciting, man. I remember we were sitting. We always used to get seats right next to right next to the bullpen, so we can enjoy, enjoy watching it. And it was nuts, man. It was definitely a great day. And like I said, who knew that 27 years later, I'd be on the roster.
So over the years, what did being a Marlins fan mean to you and your baseball development?
Well, I mean, I really wasn't. I mean, I was a baseball fan. I mean, I really didn't have a specific team. I enjoyed watching the Marlins play. I enjoyed watching them, and '97 when they won, Beckett, Burnett, all those guys. It's definitely exciting. To be around. Like I said, it's gonna be a fun time, and watching them and watching them play and seeing the guys who've come through the organization. Watching the teams get put together and then disassembled and put back together was interesting. It made things interesting, and I had its up and downs, but I mean everybody does, and every team does, but definitely made me push to to want to play baseball definitely as a career. And I'm grateful my parents made sure that whenever we got the chance we got to go to games, and we got a good experience.
Now we fast forward to 2015, having competed against this team first as a Padre, then as a Red. What do you know about this team now?
I know that there's a few guys in that lineup that I'm glad I'm not having to face. Watching this team, originally the first year whenever Jose Fernandez came about, I remember I was talking to Ryan Webb when Webby was here. Me and Webby are good buddies, and asked him about him. Asked him about what kind of guy is he, and what's he all about? Wanting to know. I mean, the kid's got an unbelievable arm. I think he's, I don't have to you know, talk good about him. He does it, you know, his performance says it all himself. So, you know, I just kind of wanted to get a feel for him, and I'm definitely going to be interested in this pitching staff, you know, being one of the, you know, one of the guys, you know, one of the older guys, obviously. I'm excited to get in and work with these guys. You know, obviously I'm not going to walk in and be the pitch coach and try to change everything, but, you know, I want to make it fun for these guys, but I also want it to where, you know, we still compete. You know, maybe we have like a little, like, you know, like a friendly game going on between the starting pitchers, which I'm kind of getting a little something in my head of, you know, what I want to do with the guys, you know, to kind of just make it fun and make it competitive and to push, you know, everybody throughout the season. And, you know, I'm just itching for it to be spring training already.
You were telling me before about your relationship with Trevor Hoffman. Hoffy was always a guy who was a leader on his staff and who made it fun, did some of the things you're talking about. At this stage in your career now, are you comfortable coming in and being one of those guys who takes the lead a little bit like that?
Yeah, you know, I'm definitely comfortable with coming in and taking over or taking the lead. Like I said, you know, as you know, maybe that veteran leader on the pitching staff. But like I said, I'm not going to sit here and try to change everything. You know, I watch these guys. You know, I study the pitchers just as much as I study the hitters. And you know, from what I've seen from these guys, man, I mean, these flamethrowers with really good stuff, really sharp breaking stuff, and you know, good changeup. So. It's just going to be more of that, you know, that guy that's going to be there, you know, whenever something, you know, something they can't figure out or something's going hard, and then, you know, they really don't want to go to the pitching coach, or, you know, they just want to, heck, they just want to go out and go fishing just to get away and kind of get away from the whole baseball scene. You know, I'm more than open to it. You know, I'm an open book. You know, if they need anything, they'll get it. And friendly conversation, you know, hard talk when they need it or whatever the case may be. And I said, I'm ready, man. This is exciting.
You had great seasons in a very pitcher-friendly park in Cincinnati, or hitter-friendly park, rather, in Cincinnati. Now you're coming to a very pitcher-friendly park. Tell me about pitching in this ballpark. You've pitched here, I think, three times in the past.
Have I pitched here three times?
I looked it up. I think three starts. Yeah, and you pitched pretty well, too.
I'll tell you, yeah, I definitely tell you, I've definitely had a lot better luck pitching this one than I did at Joe Robbie Pro Player and Sun Life whatever stadium. Else. Yeah, all the other stadiums that they've been named. But I enjoy it. I think the only home run I've given up is Juan Pierre.
You don't have to worry about him anymore.
No, I do. Hopefully he comes around a lot more now that I'm here, man. That's going to be exciting. But it's a big ballpark. You know, it kind of reminds me of San Antonio, the Wolf in San Antonio in my AA days. Big ballpark, and just seems to kind of be like a graveyard. You know, you stay away from certain areas, you know, when you're throwing, and you know, limit your mistakes. And I mean, it's a big ballpark, and you know, they're gonna have to scrap away to get a few runs.
Give us the Matt Latos scouting report. Take us through the repertoire
of me. I can't do that, man, because when this goes out, then everybody starts reading up on it. I can't be doing that. Just know that there's fastballs coming.
Last year, an injury-plagued season for you, unfortunately. The meniscus right at the start of the spring, a bone bruise in your elbow at the end of the season. You completely healthy now, and is this a normal off season for you?
Yeah. You know, the meniscus was a freak thing. I was throwing. My cleat got caught. You know, just I felt perfectly fine, and I just over-rotated and felt a pop. You know, that's just it is what it is. They went out, took out 15% of my meniscus, so it wasn't like it was a major tear. Or anything that was really going to set me back. You know, 5 days later, I was already throwing, you know, all over again after surgery. So, you know, I originally had four bone chips in my elbow that I had removed. Normally, you would think that would take care of the problem. Then we later found out that, you know, that there was some cartilage damage, and that was what was causing the bone bruise. And, you know, I pitched half of my 16 starts with that pain in my elbow, you know, just because I felt like, you know, with my attitude, my mentality on the mound, you know, if I'm pitching and I'm hitting my spots, I'm just as deadly. And it really did. It taught me a lot, because I learned to pitch and not just rely on me throwing 92 to 94, 95. You know, I really had to mix and match and really concentrate on hitting my spots. So that was also a plus. But you know, I got a procedure done where they put stem cells into my elbow to kind of help with that cartilage, and hopefully it did its job. I feel like it has. I've been doing my rehab before I got traded. I was doing rehab at the Reds orthopedic center, and everything feels fantastic. I start throwing after Christmas, and I'm extremely excited about that. So I've been doing my shoulder program. Necessary stuff of what I need to get done, and everything feels fantastic.
If you won't give us the Matt Latos breakdown. Tell me about when your new teammates here, D. Gordon, when he's on first base, what does he do to a pitcher?
Gives him anxiety is what he does. You know, he's not only that, you know, just him getting on base, he's a tough out, man. He's scrappy. He puts the ball on the ground. He's got a chance to get on base. I mean, I watched it with Billy Hamilton. You know, I really didn't get to see D in person all the time, but, you know, I'm definitely looking forward to it. Tough out, a good guy. I mean, I've always talked to him over in L.A. You know, always go out of my way to just you know, just say hi, just, you know, kind of go out of my way. It's a guy, you know, that I respect on the playing field, and you know, it's going to be exciting. Guy gets on first base, he get on to second base, get the scoring position for Yelich, and, you know, if Yelich can't do the job, you know, he could either take third for Stanton, you know, or you know, wait for Stanton and Morse, but it's going to be electric to see him on the base pass, and I can't wait to start screaming at him when he's on the bases.
Looking forward to watching D. Gordon. Looking forward to watching Matt Latos. Thanks for the time.
That was Matt Latos, who at age 27, just turned 27 a few days ago, will join Henderson Alvarez, Jared Cozart, Tom Kohler, we would imagine, potentially Dan Heron, David Phelps, and ultimately, you would expect Jose Fernandez before too long. Would ought to be one of the better rotations we've seen here in Miami in quite some time. Latos, guy's got a chance to have a huge year. He's got motivation in that this is a contract year for him. Latos will be a free agent after 2015, so a big year for him in this offseason where you see a lot of pitchers making a lot of money over 5-, 6-, 7-year deals. A year that ought to be a big one, hopefully be a great one for Matt Latos as he joins the Marlins here in 2015. When we come back and have a few minutes, take some of your phone calls. If you have questions or comments about this Marlins team, now's the time to jump online, 866-801-0940. The number to call, 866-801-0940. Our final segment on Marlins Hot Stove right after this on 940 Wins.
Baseball's hot stove season is here. The Marlins' Glenn Geffner is on 940 Wins, Miami Sports.
Well, you've got a couple of nights of Hanukkah left. Got 3 days till Christmas. If you are still looking for some presents for the baseball fan in your family and your life, got a pretty good suggestion for you. How about 2015 season tickets at Marlins Park? Season ticket plan start at just $380. You can take advantage of the new $15 per game full season plan with great seat locations and a free Marlins jersey for every 2 seats purchased. Place your deposit today and start enjoying all the savings and benefits of being a Marlins season ticket holder. Make somebody happy. Marlins season tickets for the holidays this year. Call 1-877-MARLINS or go online to marlins.com/2015tickets. If you want to get online, talk some baseball, 866-801-0940, the number to call. We have heard tonight from two of the newest Marlins already, both Matt Latos and Michael Morse. I want to spend a couple minutes talking about the other deals the Marlins made on Friday, the 5-player trade with the Yankees, and then the extension of that trade, sending Casey McGee to the Giants. From my perspective, you look at all the moves the Marlins have made this winter, and it's obvious how each and every one of them makes this a better team in 2015, a team that has set itself up to be a serious postseason contender. The deal with the Yankees, and by extension, the ensuing trade of Casey to the Giants, a little different for me, though. Let me start with this. If you look at the 2014 seasons and their career track records, I don't think there's a debate. There's no debate, I don't think, that the Marlins can expect to be better with Martin Prado at third base than they would have been with Casey McGee returning. But there are a couple of reasons why, for me, this feels a little bit different than the other moves the Marlins have made this winter, and why I'm guessing there's probably more internal debate over this deal than any other. Casey McGee was a big part of the heart and soul of this Marlins team in 2014. We talked about that a little bit earlier. Being around the club every day, I think you could probably make the argument that no player did more to set the tone in the clubhouse than Casey. He was a pro's pro. He knew how to have some fun when the time was right, but he also knew how to make sure everybody in that clubhouse is ready to go to work at 7:10 every night. His taking the lead on the field and in the clubhouse in Milwaukee on the night Giancarlo was hit in the face really, I think, was the ultimate demonstration to me of what kind of a person, what kind of a teammate Casey McGee is. This is a player whose presence is really going to be missed in that clubhouse. Now, with that said, he'll be replaced at third base by Martin Prado, another player, whoever he's been over the years, as a Brave, as a D-back, and as a Yankee, has been regarded in a similar fashion, another terrific clubhouse presence. In fact, at one point, Chipper Jones called Martin Prado the best teammate he had ever had. Now, you go on the field, Prado's a career 291 hitter, a 340 lifetime OBP. He's got more pop than Casey, having averaged 35 doubles and 12 homers over the last 6 seasons. So this seems to be an upgrade on the field. He's a terrific clubhouse guy from all we've heard. He signed for the next two seasons, whereas Casey's going to be a free agent after 2015. There are a lot of reasons to swap out Casey for Prado, but still it's easy to understand what Michael Hill meant when he talked over the weekend about how difficult it was for him to call Casey and tell him that he'd been traded to the Giants. He is really going to be missed in that clubhouse. Now, beyond that component of the deal, there's one other part that leaves me a little bit nervous. We've told you about Prado. He's a great addition. I like David Phelps, a 28-year-old who, as both a starter and a reliever, has been battle-tested over the last three seasons in the tough AL East. He's a nice addition to this staff, whether it's going to be in the rotation or in the bullpen. Unloading Garrett Jones and the $5 million he was due to make next year, no doubt the right move for this team, even if it meant including pitching prospect Domingo Germán as an added enticement for the Yankees to take Jones. But here's the one other piece of this deal that scares me a little bit. There's risk associated with virtually any trade that you make. In this case, that risk for the Marlins is that Nathan Eovaldi finally puts it all together and becomes a top half of the rotation starter in New York. He's still only 23 years old. You know all about the pure stuff. There have been any number of pitchers for whom the Marlins have had high hopes in recent years, only to see them fizzle. Guys like Andrew Miller, Chris Volstad, Sean West, and Jacob Turner, just to name a few. But none of those pitchers showed us what we saw from Eovaldi in flashes over the last three seasons. Now, there's a chance he never masters an off-speed pitcher to go along with that electric fastball. But based on what we saw from him, I think there's enough of a chance that he might, that he's a tough guy for me to see go. Bottom line, this Marlins team is better in 2015 because of this trade, and I guess really that's the only goal. In that case, mission accomplished. But if that light bulb goes off for Nathan Eovaldi at some point soon in New York, he is a guy who might really be missed here over the long haul. But that's the risk you take with any trade you make. One other player the Marlins acquired in a deal earlier this winter, Dan Heron. Chris on Twitter wanted to know about the possibility still of making a deal with Dan Heron, either to get him here or to ship him back to the West Coast, where he's professed a preference to play. And Chris mentioned something that had been reported earlier today that seems like an interesting possibility. If Dan Heron is going to make the decision he doesn't want to play in Miami, you know the Marlins still get $10 million from the Dodgers, even if Heron doesn't pitch for the Marlins in 2015, if he opts to retire. If Heron asks to be traded, a possibility that Chris points out on Twitter, what about the San Diego Padres? And it's something that makes a lot of sense. I think it was John Heyman who might have written about this earlier in the day today. The Padres, a team looking potentially to add an arm in that rotation. San Diego, a spot where Dan Heron has said he would like to be, close to his wife and kids in Los Angeles. Padres have a lot of extra outfielders, having signed Matt Kemp, having signed Justin Upton, having acquired Matt Kemp in a trade, rather, having signed Justin Upton, and then bringing Will Myers in a three-team trade with the Nationals and the Rays. So the Padres have an overflow of outfielders with the guys who were there in the past, and Marlins most likely in the market still for an extra outfielder, so maybe there could be a match there. Make Dan Heron happy, send him to the Padres, and bring an extra outfielder back here, somebody to back up Giancarlo, Marcelo Ozuna, and Christian Yelich. It's a possibility. Chris mentioned it on Twitter, and we'll throw that out there as well as we look ahead to what's next for this Marlins team. So much has been done already. We're not even to Christmas yet, but still some tweaking to do. Maybe a lefty in the bullpen, maybe some bench help, maybe an extra outfielder. We shall see. That's all the time we have for this week. Want to thank our guests tonight, a couple of the newest Marlins, Michael Morse and Matt Latos. Thanks to our in-studio engineer, Mike Lekomiak. And thanks to you for, again, being with us for another edition of Marlins Hot Stove. If you missed any of tonight's show or would like to go back and listen to past shows, all of our Marlins Hot Stove shows are available online at marlins.com/hotstove. They're also available as free podcasts on the iTunes Store. Don't forget, we're off next week, but we're back with you Monday night, January 5th. We'll be adding a second hour to the show in the new year. So join us from 7 to 9 Monday night, beginning on January the 5th. More Marlins Hot Stove. Until then, hope you have a wonderful holiday season. Now stay tuned for Monday Night Football. A lot on the line as Peyton Manning takes the Broncos into Cincinnati. It's coming up next on your home for Marlins baseball all season and all off-season long, Miami Sports Station 940 Winds.